Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After, and I am your host, Sheila Ferrando. We have a full show for you today with two interviews. The first one is with Mayor Sue Montgomery of Notre-Dame-de-Grâce, Côte-des-Neiges. It is about police violence and our need to use body cams for police accountability. Sue makes comments on our right to film our landlords during their duties, civilian oversight, and the closure of Station 11 in NDG. Listen in. The second interview is with solo musician and rock artist Clinsden Gilbert. He has some singles he'd like to share. Let's start the day off with some music.
Thank you.
WCDN, we have a sad and tragic history of police violence against Black men. The senseless killing of people of color needs to end. Systemic racism is undeniable. It is present in the SPVM and all facets of our society. That is a quote from Sue Montgomery, mayor of Notre Dame de Grasse, Côte des Neiges. With us today, we have Sue Montgomery. Hi, Sue, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you became involved in the issue of racism and police violence in Montreal.
Well, my name is, I'm obviously Sue Montgomery, and I'm the mayor of Côte des Neiges NDG. I was elected in 2017. But before that, I was a journalist for a good 30 years, and one of my beats was the justice system. So I covered a lot of the trials and inquiries into following police shootings, such as Anthony Griffin, a young Black man shot in NDG. I covered the police inquiry into the shooting of Freddy Villanueva. I covered the Barnabé trial. So, you know, there's a lot, and through those experiences, I saw how we have a problem in our society with racial profiling, and also accountability, holding police account for their actions. And there's a real issue with oversight. You know, it's the police investigating the police.
In NDG, there was a death recently. Can you tell us that story?
Well, it happened last week, and very tragically, a man was walking along Côte Saint-Luc and, you know, around West Hill. And, you know, this is a man who, you know, apparently is 41 years old, has a family. His name is Sheffield Matthews, and he was killed. And tragically, we've lost another life. And, you know, it's being investigated by the Bureau Enquête and Indépendant. And, you know, we'll see what comes out of it. But I just think anyone who dies in our borough, it's a tragedy.
What do you think about the current street campaign to defund the police?
Well, my feeling is we need, first of all, I think it's wrong to call it defunding the police. I mean, that gives people the impression that we want to get rid of the police force altogether. I think what we need is we need community policing. We need police that are from and in the neighborhoods. People who walk the beat and get to know the vulnerable members of our society, the elderly, people who suffer from mental illness, the homeless, you know, so when there is a call involving our vulnerable residents, police have sort of a background story there and they can respond accordingly. I think we also, you know, we need to expand the program in which it's called the Équipe Mobile Référence Intervention d'Itinérance. Okay, so this is just a team that is downtown and that just deals with the homelessness, with homeless incidents with homeless people. But the problem with that is that, you know, it's just, we don't see mental illness just among the homeless. I mean, you know, many, many, many people are suffering from mental illness, and even more so because of COVID. So I would like to see this program expanded into all areas of Montreal. And that's where, if there's a call involving people in difficulty, the police are accompanied by, say, social workers, people with psychiatric training who know how to best intervene, because these are people that are in distress. So, and oftentimes they're people from countries in which there's been genocide, there's been war, there's dictatorships. So the sight of someone in uniform with a gun really can cause the situation to deteriorate. So if you have someone accompanying the police who can speak calmly and gently and knows how to calm a person down, we can avoid these kind of shootings and killings. So, that's one way we can do it. The other thing is we need civilian oversight. So I would like to see, it's a group of civilians, not police, not former police officers. It's a panel or, this group of people that would look into police shootings. So there are people that are coming at it with no bias. They're not trained as police officers, and they would be looking at the incident through clear eyes. Also, police need to be accountable. They are accountable to municipal council. So we need an administration that will hold them accountable, because we, as elected officials, are accountable to the public. So, for example, recently when the police station was taken out of my borough, Station 11, it was removed in September. That was a decision that was made by the police. And sadly, this administration just let it happen, despite my protest and despite many, many signatures on a petition from my residents to maintain this police station in our borough. Because
What
even though,
led to the decision to close the station?
well, that's interesting, because we never really got any data. The police shockingly couldn't even tell us how many walk-ins they get into that station on a daily basis, which to me would be, basic data that you would track. What came out in an information session with the police and the public is that it was basically a real estate opportunity. The lease at Station 11 was ending, and Station 9 in Côte Saint-Luc could absorb those officers. So they thought, why not just close down one station and have Station 9 and Station 11 merge as one station, which is ridiculous, So here you have a large station in Côte Saint-Luc, where, I think it's a very different community than Côte de Neige and DG. You have more elderly people, you have less crime, it's less diverse. So all of that means, I think, that there is, there are fewer problems or issues, that come with a diverse having a diverse population and different socioeconomic levels and so on. So, to me, it was clear they just saw a real estate opportunity and they grabbed it. In fact, they admitted as much during this information session we had with them.
So we're not going to have that station in the future,
No,
but we
it's
still have police forces, right?
well, we
So
do, but I think, a lot of the budget, what defund the police is calling for, even though the name of that movement to me is not clear, is to take some of the police budget and put it into other resources, such as what I was talking about earlier, this mobile team that intervenes when you have situations of mental health. I mean, that is not the police, that is not their job. They are not equipped, nor are they trained, nor did they sign up for that to deal with it. But obviously, with fewer resources for people dealing with mental health, we're seeing more and more and more of that happening. Now, I'm not saying that, people with mental health issues commit crime or are violent. What I'm saying is we are going to see more people in distress, and the way to deal with that is not shooting them, but rather speaking to them and calming them down, making them feel safe, and then following up with with help. You know, they need help.
It's obvious, Sue, that this is how things should be. But where are we going with the police? How are they going to be accountable for acts of violence against others in the future that will make those acts of violence tone down?
Well, you know, our council, our borough council voted to have body cams, as did the municipal council many months ago. We voted to have body cams on the police. Now, what Valerie Plante's administration is doing with that, I don't know. I haven't heard anything since. But I've spoken to defense lawyers, I've spoken to people in the Black Lives Matter movement, and, you know, everybody I speak with, and I include, you know, I agree with this, is that the police need to be equipped with body cams because it protects both parties in a situation. You have a clear record of what happened when you have video of what went down. And so, you know, but what happens now is immediately after one of these incidents, the police come out with their narrative. And it's always someone who's brandishing a knife. And, you know, I mean, we've seen that they are able to bring people under control and arrest them. We saw that in Quebec City, but that man was white. Is there a double standard here? That's the question I would like examined.
How will
You
the
know,
courts take civilian oversight into consideration in deciding cases of police misconduct?
but this is what we need, right? Is that if you have the body cams, then you have the evidence. And it's not the police word against the victim's word. Because the
Sue?
police, like they said, their word is always going to be taken over, you know, a criminal or somebody who's alleged to have committed some kind of crime.
How is, if I can ask you, how is this going to increase our personal rights to social media? Are people going to be allowed to film freely all incidents? You know, your landlord comes to the door, you can film the repairs, things like that. Is that going to be legal?
Well, I mean, anybody, you're allowed to record the police and their interventions as long as you don't interfere with it. That is that's legal. But why not just have the body cams on their bodies so that you know, there it's an official record of what happened. And therefore the courts can look at that and decide. I think it just makes sense. Other police forces are doing it. So why not?
What can we do in our society to stop racism and police violence?
Well, you know, it's fear of the other. You know, what we need is we need our institutions to better reflect our population. For instance, we have a very white city council. We have three racialized people on council. Out of 103 councillors, only three are racialized. I find that appalling. We need, you know, to use our white privilege and our networks to get people, racialized people elected, to get them into on boards, on in positions of power, so that their voice is heard. And you know, I think we need to break down those barriers by getting to know one another. And I think that's one way you can do it in the police force too, is by getting police officers that better reflect our communities. Because, you know, right now, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's very low of racialized people on the police force. And the fire department and all of these municipal bodies, because I just think that, you know, it was kind of like with the women's movement, right? Until we had role models, you know, women never thought of going into positions of power until those, you know, those women broke the glass ceiling or whatever you want to call it, like broke into those male-dominated roles.
Sure, of course, like you did.
So, And it's the same with racialized people. Until they start seeing people that look like them in positions of power, they're not going to feel like their voice matters. They're not going to be interested in getting involved because, it's nothing that they can relate to.
No, role models are very important. You're right.
Important. And and that's what I'm trying to do is to I've started my own party. I really, really want to run candidates from all walks of life. Nothing against white dudes. I'm married to one. They have held the power for far too long. And it's time to step aside. And in fact, I encourage a lot of the councillors on municipal council right now to step aside and to help someone use their network, use their influence to help someone get elected. Like be it a woman, a racialized person, or both. Like that is how things are going to change, is when privilege, white privilege, starts lifting other people up by using their influence and networks.
What do you intend to do in your next campaign to stop racism and police violence?
Well, one, I'm pushing for the body cams. I will continue to push for civilian oversight rather than police investigating the police. I will push for accountability. I don't think municipal council is holding the police accountable right now. I think the police are doing basically what they want. We need that accountability and community policing. We need people in the community, close to the community, getting to know the community, and not being some outsiders that just are parachuted in when something happens. It's sort of like journalism, right? When you parachute a journalist into a war in some country, they don't know what they're dealing with, and they can get a very skewed view of reality. So you need people that are living in the community and aware of everything that's going on.
Where can our listeners go if they would like to listen to more of your views or let you know what's going on in their world?
Well, I'm all over social media. I'm on Facebook. I have a mayor's Facebook page as well as my own. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Messenger. I have email. So I'm very present on social media. Every once in a while, I have to take a break because it gets to be a bit much. Generally, I'm there and answer. I'm happy to get into conversations with people. I also, during COVID, have been trying to take part in different webinars and different community gatherings, to hear what's going on in the community and to lend my support, and to say I'm with people. Like racism, we do not want to become like our neighbors south of us. It just cannot happen here. And we have to understand each other and talk to one another.
Well, thank you for your interview today, Sue Montgomery.
Thank you very much for having me. Stay safe, stay well, wear a mask, wash your hands, keep your distance. We will get through this.
You are listening to Mayor Sue Montgomery talking about police violence, racism, and the closure of Station 11. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
The sun replace the
moonlight. Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
From Kerala, India, comes Clinswin Gilbert, a guitarist and all-round musician. He studied in Canada, and he's here for new opportunities in the music business, making his own way through music production. He has some brand new work to share. With us today, we have Clinswin Gilbert. Hi, Clinswin, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
First, introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a musician in Canada.
Oh, hi, my name is, I'm Clinswin, and I first arrived here to do my music business management. So before that, I had done a sound engineering from India, and then I worked as a freelance musician for 2 years, and I was performing with many, many bands at the time. And being here, my main goal was to really propel myself into the mainstream music industry. And, you know, I was always fascinated with Western music, even when I was, you know, a kid, a teenager. Loved bands like Metallica, Soundgarden, and many more. So, you know, that kind of interest really made me chase my dream. And now I'm doing my own kind of stuff. You know, I have a loop station. I do solo acoustic things. And, yeah, that's pretty much me in a nutshell. And I graduated last year in July. And I'm doing shows in the GTA and making new song, making new music, putting myself out there, you know, working my way up.
As a solo musician, what is your process when you approach a new project?
Well, the thing is, I think I'm an innate writer. I write so much, like random ideas that pops in my head about emotions and about a different perspective of things more than a musician. So I think as a solo musician, I write down these ideas in my mobile or my notepad, and I with my guitar, and I try to figure out how to emote that feeling musically. So that's the first step. And then I go into this workstation, you know, I try to, I program my drums, and, you know, I bring in the instruments, and I get in touch with my producer friends at the time. You know, I have different producers. So I get in touch with them and set up a dates. And then we go at the heat of the battle. We try to record new stuff, new materials. And many of my stuff is just like that. Many instant ideas come in the studio, like guitar tracks in terms of harmonies, and maybe even new lyric ideas. So yeah, that's how I approach my, you know, being a solo musician. You have to be aware of all the tracks in your head. And first time is just one riff, one idea, or one note, maybe, you know, or one progression. And this snowballs into something big. And the next thing you know, you have a song ready. And then you make the song, you know, you master the song. And, you know, it's a creative process, but it's very time consuming. But I love it. I love doing it.
What is the name of your newest single, and what's the story behind the song?
Well, my new single is called Sweet Nicotine. And, you know, it's a very metaphorical song. And the Sweet Nicotine is basically a metaphor for toxic relationships. And it basically means that you're just like smoking cigarettes. Sometimes at the moment, nicotine is a chemical in the cigarette and it makes us feel good. But the thing is, in the long term, it does damage to our psyche. So that was the idea behind the song. And I was really, at the time before creating, the song came in this first riff in F sharp minor, which I, in a standard tuning, I wrote my acoustic guitar. So at the time, there was a lot of unfortunate events that happened in my life. I was with some people that thought they were my friends and they would have the best for me. But in the end, they kind of stabbed me in the back, and I had to, you know, living alone in a different country itself is hard. And just getting that in my head was too much. So, you know, I changed my room. I stayed away from all these people. And, you know, there was a woman involved. And, you know, all these things came like hitting me like a brick in my head. And then one day, you know, I was alone living in this place in downtown Oshawa, a very dark place. You know, it wasn't, because I had to leave that room that I was in and the people that I was with. And at that time, this thing came to me and I started writing, and different metaphors about wordplays came to my head. And, you know, then I started recording the idea, and I showed it to one of my friends back in India, and I showed him, hey, I made this thing. And the first thing he told me was, dude, record that. And I showed it to another friend, the same thing, dude, record that. That is a good thing that you made. Record that fast before it goes away, before you slip into other things. So that idea came to me and I started writing Sweet Nicotine. And yeah, that's basically it. The song is basically about those kind of people that, you know, we cling on to despite knowing that they're bad for us. You know, it could be like a lover, or, you know, could be a parent or a relative, anybody, a friend. So that's the idea of the song, you know, in terms of meaning.
May we hear some of your music?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it.
Here's Sweet Nicotine on the Wednesday Morning After.
So
have you been surviving COVID-19?
Well, it is a tough time. This year has been tough, but I try to make most of it. But, you know, depending on the gigs that I was compared to last year, this year was like way low. So doing shows, making people happy is one of my, you know, things that I feel good about myself. So that is really low. But I still get gigs. You know, we follow the social distancing protocols in some events. And we, you know, we try to make the most despite the situations. And I'm also, I entered in a little bit of teaching. So I have some students that, you know, they're very passionate and they're very eager to learn guitars. And so I consume my time with teaching students and also recording new materials and, you know, trying to do a little bit of social media work on my pages. And it's all been productive, really, you know, because as a musician, you try to build new things. And, you know, and I have this producer called Prince, who's also graduated MBM with me. And we've been making new songs, putting in new ideas. And, you know, sometimes some days are very harder than usual. But, you know, we take it one day at a time and we do things one thing at a time and we go by, you know.
You have a second single out called She Make Me Go. Tell us about that song.
Oh, yeah. I mean, She Make Me Go, I released it before Sweet Nicotine. But it's actually the main highlight about this song is it's the most streamed song that I have on Spotify. As of now, it has more than 20,000 streams on Spotify. And it's gotten a really good response from people. And it has like Latin American roots in it because I'm a huge Santana fan. And I love reggaeton music too. So Daddy Yankee and all that reggaeton style music. So I a little bit dwelled in that realm and I came out with this song called She Make Me Go, and it has a small Spanish guitar solo in there. And yeah, it's song is basically, you know, an energetic, fun song, you know. And even when I sing it live, there's a part where I like, She Make Me Go, oh. So I make the crowd sing that part and we have a good time with it. So it's a very personal and very, you know, very energetic song that I like to play live and listen to, you know, as a listener. And people like it too.
May we hear some more of your music?
Sure, why not, yeah.
This is She Make Me Go on CKUT.
To the movies sometimes. Love it when she does a thing when I rhyme. Love it when she say please. She does those teas, my sweet release. Love it when she get down on her force. Love it when she moans to do one more. When I kiss her lips, this LSD sips make me wanna trip. Cause when you fall in love with the girl, you feel that your whole world is a blur. My engines burn and your wheels all turn. And you finally learn, she made me go, oh, 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 she made me go, oh, 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 she made me go, oh, 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 she made me go, oh, 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 oh. She's like a motherfucking dynamite.
Are you sexy?
Why she wear them skirts so tight?
Why she do that?
Why she paint her lips so red? Me wanna shred and take it to my bed. She can feel the vibrations of my string. She could be the lord of my own rings. I could be her king and she could be my queen. A muse that sings. Cause I once fell in love with a girl. I felt that my whole world was a blur. My engines burn and the wheels all turn. And then I finally learned. She made me go, oh, oh, oh.
Girl, I love the way you move.
moving. If you about to get with me, then girl, I promise you ain't losing. I just wanna hold you in my arms, cause you my everything. I don't wanna fight, cause I can't lose you over anything. She looking hella good when I walk in, she get excited. Sorry, baby, I don't love you, I just love to get inside her. You know every time you leave, I'm gonna want you back. And she know that if I leave, I'm never calling back, ayy. Can't fall in love cause we too busy getting busy. I be getting with your lady on the daily, man, it's crazy, right? She don't want my money or my Gucci, she just want the pipe. So I'll be sleeping with your girl, just me and her tonight. You made me go, oh.
Listeners want some free listening time or to buy your tracks, where should they go?
Well, there is a lot of options. First of all, you can stream the my songs on Spotify. It's a KLINSVIN, Klinsvin. And also you can buy them on Apple Music, iTunes, you know, and Google Play. You can get it on Google Play, Deezer. And it's the same name everywhere, KLINSVIN, Klinsvin. And some of the songs are on Amazon, and yeah, check them out, you know, listen to the songs and be happy. You know, it's a tough time. It's important to stay positive and be happy, you know.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Klinsvin Gilbert speaking about his latest music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
COVID-19 pandemic in Canada is serious. We must continue to practice all public health measures. Follow local guidelines for gatherings, maintain physical distancing, wash your hands, wear a mask, and download the COVID Alert app. If you have symptoms, even mild ones, stay home. Protect yourself and others. Learn more at canada.ca/coronavirus or 1-833-784-4397. A message from the Government of Canada.
This is Democracy Now!
90% is a game changer. 90%, now you are hoping to have a tool in your war against this pandemic that could be significantly effective.
Pfizer has announced early data indicating its coronavirus vaccine is more than 90% effective at preventing COVID-19 infections, but many questions remain. The news came on the same day the total number of U.S. cases topped 10 million. We'll speak to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Laurie Garrett. We'll also look at the death of Palestinian chief negotiator Saab Erekat. He's died of COVID-19. Then fears are growing. The Trump administration is moving to overturn the election of Joe Biden. On Monday, Attorney General William Barr authorized new probes into voter fraud as Republican lawmakers are backing Trump's decision not to concede to the president-elect.
And President Trump is 100% within his rights to look into allegations of irregularities and weigh his legal options.
We'll speak to Kristen Clark, president of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Attorney General William Barr upended long-standing Justice Department policy Monday by announcing federal prosecutors could investigate, quote, specific allegations of voter fraud in last week's election. In response, the Justice Department's chief election crimes prosecutor, Richard Pilger, resigned in protest. Former Justice Department official Vinita Gupta criticized Barr, saying, quote, this is about disruption, disinformation, and sowing chaos, unquote. This comes as top Republicans are backing President Trump's refusal to concede the election, claiming without providing any evidence that the vote was marred by fraud. According to the Associated Press, Biden has secured 290 votes in the Electoral College so far. His lead in the popular vote is approaching 5 million and counting. On Monday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell defended Trump's decision not to concede to Biden.
President Trump is 100% within his rights to look into allegations of irregularities and weigh his legal options.
The Trump campaign is also continuing to file numerous lawsuits in battleground states despite no evidence emerging of voter fraud. Voting rights expert and author Ari Berman responded to the news by writing, quote, "There were no irregularities. This is an attempted coup, and every major figure in America needs to denounce it. U.S. attorneys need to resign in protest. They're trying to overturn the election and subvert the will of the people," Berman wrote. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, is rejecting calls to step down after the state's two sitting Republican senators, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, called for his resignation, claiming he had, quote, failed to deliver honest and transparent elections. Senators Loeffler and Perdue made the stunning request after both of their races went to runoffs against Democratic challengers and with President-elect Joe Biden on the verge of becoming the first Democratic presidential candidate to win Georgia since 1992. The Republican Secretary of State, Raffensperger, dismissed part of Loeffler and Perdue's claims as, quote, laughable. As the number of U.S. COVID-19 cases tops 10 million, President-elect Joe Biden gave a nationally televised address Monday warning of a dark winter ahead, pleading for the use of face masks.
I implore you, wear a mask. Do it for yourself. Do it for your neighbor. A mask is not a political statement, but it is a good way to start pulling the country together. I want to be very clear. The goal of mask wearing is not to make your life less comfortable. It's to take something or take something away from you. It's to give something back to all of us, a normal life.
This comes as two more close associates of President Trump have tested positive for the virus. Housing Secretary Dr. Ben Carson and the attorney David Bossie, who's leading Trump's post-election legal challenges. Meanwhile, global stocks soared on Monday following news from Pfizer that early data from a large clinical trial shows its coronavirus vaccine cut symptomatic COVID-19 cases by more than 90%. We'll speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Laurie Garrett after headlines. In news from the Middle East, Saeb Erekat, the Secretary General of the Palestine Liberation Organization, has died at 65 after he became infected with COVID-19. Erekat was a key Palestinian negotiator and